Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right, it's another Hoops Adjacent episode of the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge, nice day here in D.C. Was out in the valley in Cali. What's up, my friend?
I'm good. I like the little rhyme scheme there, boy. D.A. in his drive time, disc jockey from the 70s vibe right now.
Right. Me and Melvin Lindsay. Right. The inventor of the quiet storm, the late, great Melvin Lindsay. So props to Melvin Lindsay. We will have Chris Webber on in just a few minutes. Really excited about this, having C-Webb back. It's been, I think, about a year since he was on. Obviously, want to talk to him about the maize and blue and the run and everything that's going on in Michigan. Want to do something real quick, though, because I was annoyed last night. Well, I was very annoyed. I watched watched UConn and Baylor in the Women's Elite Eight, and it was a great game. Just a great, great game. Everything that you could have hoped for. Baylor should have been a one seed. They weren't a two seed. That should have been a Final Four game. But it wasn't so much about the game, which was great. It was about the ending and what everybody saw at the ending with what was pretty obviously a foul. Okay. I mean, I'm not even arguing whether it was a foul or not. Yeah, it was a foul. There was clearly two, you know, the two UConn players, both of them hit her. It's a foul. I mean, I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is people doing what people always do, which is crying about one call at the end of a game as if that one call decided the game. You know, and it just annoys me when you try to push back on that and say, well, wait, because Renee Montgomery, the fabulous Renee Montgomery, put this out. She put a tweet out, which I liked, which said, you know, first of all, one call doesn't decide the game. Referees put their whistle away in the last minute. Everybody knows this. You're not going to get a call. And, you know, you can't worry about one play by ignoring a dozen other plays that happened before. And so I got into it with a couple of people on Twitter, you know, and it just annoys me because it's just so selective.
Right.
It's so selective. It pisses me off that people just get so selective in their fandom that they can just center on one play and say, that's why we lost the game, because the referees made a mistake. What happened to that 19-0 run in the third quarter? Did that have anything to do with the outcome of the game? Y'all had the game in control, and all of a sudden, y'all let UConn rip off 19 straight. Did that have anything to do with the outcome of the game?
Right.
You know? It just kills me.
There's so much that goes into, especially, you know, in these big moments, like this is an Elite Eight game, and in those last minutes, it's tense. There's so much happening that has an effect on the outcome, whether it be rotation, whether it be a missed shot or two or three. It's so much that goes into how these outcomes, you know, bear themselves out. Because, look, man, these are the most highest leverage possessions of the game, you know? Right. And it's not just going to be that last one where you might have got hit on your arm or you might have got nudged off of your spot or you know, and maybe it was a foul, but so much more goes into it. And not just what's happening on the ball either. Missing help rotations. This people missing all kinds of things. This people not setting a good enough screen. So much goes into this stuff that affects the outcome. It's just, you know, it's just our typical lazy culture about, well, that's the thing that I saw, you know, and is stuck in my mind. So that's everything. It's ridiculous.
It just kills me because, you know, that's like, was that the only call the referees missed all night? You know what I mean? Like, come on. That's ridiculous. You know, and so, and plus, you don't even know what would have happened if they had called it. Y'all are just assuming that Dejounte Carrington is just going to step up there and knock two free throws down with a trip to the floor on a racket. Well, hey, come on now. Come on. I seen dudes that shoot 93% gack in the last minute.
Of course. And college players specifically.
Exactly.
Are known. Exactly. It's like, you know, even a chip shot, like in college football, there's no such thing as a chip shot in a big spot with a kicker. And college basketball players, both men and women, when they get to that free throw line, in the biggest spots of the game, they're going to miss.
Exactly. Ain't no certainty. You know what I'm saying? There's no certainty. And you don't know, even if she makes the free throws, you don't know UConn doesn't come down and Paige Beckers hits a 30-footer at the gun. You don't know. How do you know? Right. You know?
And again, as we always say, DA, this is what makes sports what it is that we're having that argument. Like, yeah, you guys are going to come out and start complaining about one missed foul call. Well, me and DA are going to want to talk about the rest of the game.
Right? Exactly.
And that'll be our fun little sports argument.
Exactly, exactly. So we're going to have C. Webb on in a minute. I want to talk to him. There's so much, Waz. I definitely want to talk to him about Georgia. I want to talk to him about, you know, about his businesses. I want to talk to him about Michigan having a chance to go to the Four. So we will have C. Webb back here in just a minute.
Let's bring D.A. into the conversation here.
Welcome to Who
Comma Is
Adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs. Like the boasting and braggadocio, I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing him.
Yes.
Yes. And then he kept their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in
there. Lambre.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship money that can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoops 5-4. We have ignition.
Hey, we're back on Hoops Adjacent. Man, so happy to see my man Chris Webber. Webb, it's been too long, man. It's been too long.
Good to see you, man. We miss you. Miss you out at the games in the studio. But,
I know.
Miss you too. Definitely love the work at the Athletic and everything. So congratulations with everything.
Okay, so we were just talking about this before we went on. So when I was at TNT, our buddy Alvin Whitney, he has a great charity and he runs in honor of his late brother. They get scholarships for young people. Has an event every year, has an auction and a banquet every year that his wife, Pam Oliver, who everybody knows, does it with him. And they have guests every year and they bring people in. So I did it for like 5 or 6 years because, you know, Alvin's good people and I love doing stuff for him. And that's and I had to bring Waz. Our son was like 2 at the time. We had to bring him because I was getting an award. And my son just fell in love with C-Web, man. He just wanted to hang out with C-Web all night. That's his boy.
That's awesome.
All night. And I just told him next week, my son's going to be 17. It's unbelievable. My boy, he got sideburns now and a mustache. It's crazy. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. How's everything going, man?
Oh, man, everything's going great. Speaking of kids, man, I have twins, you know, they're 4. Or they'll be 4 at the end of April. And so, you know, I'm just, this has been crazy times. But my parents, they'll be married 50 years, end of July. And, you know, no, I haven't lost anyone during this time. So my thing is, during this crazy time, I've just been so grateful. You know, and you have to balance that. You don't want to feel bad as if it's bloating or anything. I just feel great for everybody's here. Yeah. You know, that I'm getting to talk to you and be like, damn, this is 17. How old am I? You know, so it's just really good to appreciate things in life, like your son getting that much older and me looking from afar. So, man, everything's been good. And, you know, just can't wait, hopefully, things to get back to some type of a new normal that's closer to the old normal.
I hope so, man. You're not going to have no normal for a few days because we're taping this on Tuesday. And on Tuesday night, the Maize and Blue are going for the 4 again. All right, so I got to ask you, do you watch by yourself because you just cuss and throw shit at the screen? Or do you want to have family around you to keep you sane?
So I'm not going to watch it with my kids around because, you know, I'm still fronting in front of them. Like, you know. we watch cartoons and they're talking about, like, if you get mad and you start to roar, take a deep breath and count to 4. You know, like they're going to be watching me. You
right,
know,
right, right.
Bad word in my house, you know. So I'm gonna watch it in a different room so they don't keep going, ooh, daddy, ooh. I don't want to see that side of me yet. So I'm gonna watch it by myself.
Good. That's probably the way to go.
So, Webb, when Juwan got the gig, obviously you were one of the people, because you're a public face and figure, I remember you going on a broadcast and talking about your excitement for it because, you know, everybody knows how close you and Juwan Howard are. You know, what's it been like for you to just watch him, you know, like, because it's crazy, right? Like, what you guys meant to that university, what you guys meant to the sport of college basketball, and now to see him go back to Michigan and, you know, help them restore the program to glory in a different capacity, it's got to be just amazing for you.
It is. I mean, I lobbied for him to get the job. It's satisfying to me because he went there, all those great things, right? But two reasons why it's really satisfying. One, because I know he really wants it. He wants to live on State Street the rest of his life, and he's going to do a great job with young men. You know, he, you know, by all accounts, shouldn't be alive, you know, from his childhood. So he's going to really be able to relate to young men and be honest. And then secondly, as his friend, I just love him for the naysayers.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong. You don't have to have played basketball to know the game better than anyone. You don't have to have played basketball to have an opinion. But playing basketball doesn't mean that you don't know how to coach like others. Right. You know, it's also a negative narrative. And I think all things are equal. And people didn't think Juwan was going to do this. And I'm happy because I thought he was going to do it. I just didn't know he was going to do it this quick.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, the other day Indiana hired Mike Woodson. And it's pretty much the same story. Woody played at IU. He loves IU. He'll die IU. And they hired him. Now, he's a little older than Juwan. But to me, it was crazy to see people get online talk about, well, he, you know, this is a terrible hire and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, he hasn't even been introduced yet. Like, how can you reduce it? How can you make a judgment off of somebody who literally doesn't have the job yet? Why don't we let him coach for a couple of years and see if he can do it or not?
I'm with you. It's like the Biden thing to me. I got to see his cabinet before I just criticize right. the diversity
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
Because to me, the only question is, who does he hire to be his recruiter or That's to
it?
Be second?
That's it.
Because nobody else that knows X's and O's better.
Right.
I mean, you know, we even saw that from, I forgot the team that Michigan beat, and he was he coached Juwan in Washington.
Leonard Hamilton, Florida State.
You know, he knows the game.
Right.
That team is good, and they shouldn't even have been as good as they were in the past. So it didn't surprise me. Oh, that's what Leonard Hamilton's doing. He's a great coach.
Yeah,
so
right.
I agree with you. We got to let him do his job.
Yeah, and, you know, people always want the experience. Whenever they keep certain type of people out of jobs, they mention the experience excuse. And Juwan spent how many years as an assistant with the Heat? And I'm sorry, there's probably no organization that has a better reputation on that side of things than the Miami Heat. And that's where he cut his teeth at. So, you know, just the idea that he wouldn't have the experience and the know-how, just technically, that never, you know, could cut any mustard for me. And, you know, it's dope to see him kill it for all of those reasons, C-Web, that you mentioned. But yeah, like, the types of people who are often deprived from the opportunities, we know why. So, you know, to watch him kill it like this, it's extra special.
Yeah, and it's easier not to give him a job because of, quote, privilege. You know, so the fact that he's had a great NBA life, the fact he did this, it's easier to bash him for not an opportunity and say, give it to someone else.
Yeah.
But I love Pat Riley. I mean, I may have had three conversations with in my life with him in 2 hours, just like, oh, my God, when he was talking about the road to a championship and the path. Like, I love that. And for Juwan to be under that tree, to play with greats, you know, now he can start his own tree. And I think that's sometimes what we don't realize in social equity. It's bringing people in that can do the job. So it's no question about that. But also, after that, it's their responsibility to make sure they hire a diverse staff. And it was so funny when Juwan hired the staff, I just sat back and I was like, I wonder what people are going to criticize now because they don't understand that he knows the game and he wants to rest around him. So it's fun watching.
Right. He got the recruiter. He got the old white guy. He got everything. Checked all the boxes.
and he's close with all of them.
Right, man. Right.
And the coach for all of them, too.
Right.
A great, crazy person. So it all works, man.
Man,
it all
works. Webb, I got to ask you, man. I'm just researching, you know, getting ready for this. I must admit, I did not know this. Please tell me about this. Because I was listening to you do the podcast with Q Rich and with Darius Miles the other day. It was a great podcast. Knuckleheads, you should definitely download it. It's a good podcast. They do a good job. I did not know the shorts came from Illinois. I didn't know that. That's from Marcus Liberty and them? I didn't know that.
If you realize at the time, it was from UNLV and Illinois.
Okay.
But being a Big Ten, so UNLV had wide, long shorts. Right. Not really too long, because at the time it still was fashionable to see the tights up under. But Illinois, that team with all 6-footers, and maybe it looked dramatic because they were all the same size, but it came down into like an angle and was deep. And for me, those are the shorts, man. That team.
Okay.
UNLV is my favorite team of all time, but that, and then 89 Michigan, but that 89 Illinois team, that's one of my favorites of all time.
And that's, you know what's so dope about that? Because obviously, you know, you guys are seen as defining an era of college basketball, right? Like just the Fab Five movement, just what it represented as far as, you know, because let's face it, I watched the Mike Doc and he was bumping Kenny Lattimore, right? Like, we're talking about Chris Webber, who's made beats for Nas. You know, like, you guys were the first ones to usher in the quote-unquote hip-hop generation. So I feel like a lot of people do have that level of reverence for you. And it's crazy, too, D.A. I watched Kevin Garnett on Knuckleheads. And the way that he talked about Chris Webber, like how he idolized C-Web, how he patented a lot of his, like some of the scowling. He was like, C-Web wouldn't just go lay the ball up. He would dunk it really hard and mean mug cats. Like the way cats talk about C-Web, it's amazing. I got quite emotional because I didn't know that KG was such a, like he loves C-Web. Like that's one of his, he patented his game after you. So it was like, it's kind of dope to just see all of this stuff happening right now with, like, Juwan Howard, Chris Webber, these guys are in their mid-40s, still impacting the game, still relevant. It's just dope to watch, man.
And, you know, it's funny. So it's an honor for KG to say that because my favorite basketball player is KG.
Wow.
Especially when I play. Yeah. And so much so, you know, I heard he wanted to go to Michigan, heard all the stories. Chicago, you know, Juwan went to CBS. I knew about KG, but so much so, let me tell you how much he was my favorite player that I didn't talk to him. We never said one word. After our first game, I was like, oh no, we're never talking again. You know, I like you, but I'm never working out with you or nothing.
right.
I remember I retired and the first time I saw him, I was like, what's up? And we exchanged numbers and after that it was gone. I didn't even know. And I was like, no, we competitors. I know you too well.
Right.
It's an honor that we get that love. But I will tell you one quick story. Michael Jordan, right? We go to the Olympics. We beat the Olympic team.
Yes.
But I go into this room. I'm a Jordan fan. You know, I remember this like yesterday. Why? I'm in his room and I'm looking around and he had a big earring in. I'm just checking him out. He had his shirt off and he was bumping Jodeci. He's bumping Tim and talking. And I was like, he the man. He's always- Jordan, he ain't just bumped
out of boy.
You know,
he's bumping. Oh, man. So I know you've told that story a million times about beating the Dream Team, but y'all did beat the Dream Team. And I just wonder, when the clock hit 0-0-0, did y'all just look at each other and go, fuck, what did we just do?
it was about winning, but more so than winning, I'm telling you, I was in the huddle. Tears in my eyes. I mean, I've known Grant since I was little.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby Hurley, we played on the same team.
Right.
So I had known these guys. And so I'm like, this is our dream. Like, I know you know Stockton and you're compared to him, Bobby Hurley.
Yeah.
You know, GA, I know, I mean, you know, Grant, I know you want to be Jordan. And so when it was over, I was more so thinking like, wow, I dunked on Barkley. Or Penny was like, wow, I crossed over Magic. So it was so much going on. I can't say we were thinking about the win. Everybody was in their own head.
Right.
Like, we won, but what did I do against my hero? That's what it comes back to at the end. That was a moment I'll never forget.
Man. Oh, man. That's the one I wish we had tape of that one. That's the one I wish we had the bootleg tapes of, man. But Waz mentioned something that I think is so underrated from your era, and that is the greatness of the Western Conference forward group. Wise, every year when you had to pick the all-star team, it was ridiculous. I'd sit there for hours. I'd sit there for hours. I like I could never put Rashid on. I wanted to put Rashid on like every year, and I couldn't get him on. Like, who am I taking off? Am I taking Dirk off? Right. I can't take Weber off. I can't take KG off.
Just Tim like, Duncan.
It I was can't take Tim Duncan off.
Like, it was ridiculous.
And I just wonder, like, Webb, like, the nightly competition, like, what did it do for you in terms of making you a better competitor, a better player? And how do you think your play made them better players and competitors?
It made me a better person, yeah. You know, the sports you practice and you, you know, being calm, being focused, you try to take those things to business or make it a habit so that's your personality. And so, you know, you could never get up to up. You know, like you said, you know, really it could be a week of, you know, Shaq, David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Rasheed Wallace, Dirk. Then you got physical guys like Brian Grant and them if you, right. you want to. Put those guys into.
Carmelone.
I mean, it was just always something. So it just made you, you know, be prepared, and it really was satisfying at the end of the year if you know your team had the best record, or if you know you accomplished some great things, even if it wasn't a championship. But yeah, man, those were some. You know, you have to be on your game every night. Then.
You know, what's interesting. C-Web, when I listen to you on the broadcast, I think, you know, I tell people all the time, like, when I'm listening to a broadcast, I'm there for the enthusiasm, meaning, like, these people get as geeked about basketball as I do, and I think you're one of those people who clearly still gets geeked about watching hoop, like, watching people kill it. So, you know, I think about your game, and even at the time, people were like, this guy is a futuristic big man, right? Like, the handle, the passing. You did take your game out to 19 feet. And you could post smaller guys up. Like, you had so many tricks in your bag. I know for a fact that right now you would have been a center. They would have made you play center in today's. Do you ever watch the game? Do you ever watch the Jokic's, the other type of, you know, highly skilled big man and think, man, I wish I could have transported myself to right now, because I feel like you would have been even crazier, because they would have spread it out and you would have just got to operate within so much more space and display your skill level. Do you ever geek out and think, man, I would have crushed these guys if they gave me the chance?
You know
to.
What? I think more like, you know, my generation was the last of whatever that first generation was. So, right. You know, if it wasn't for no KG or 7-footer that could guard one through whatever, there'd be no Anthony Cooper. Right. You know, and it started with, you know, Don Nelson, others that started playing that type of game.
Right,
so
right.
I do think I'm the last of that generation, the first of this generation, however you want to put it. And yeah, you know, you would be able to do a lot more. That's why I wish in Sacramento that was our whole style, and maybe we would be known specifically for right. that. But I'm just a fan because I love where the game is going, you know, and I'm out of the fact that, you know, I'm not bitter that we didn't win the championship, or I'm not trying to prove anything every day. And I'd much rather, you know, the fan appreciate the game like I appreciate it, instead of from a position of, you know, not being grateful or not understanding or always being down. I was a big fan of John Madden. It always seemed like if you missed the tackle on Bo Jackson, he didn't say, you know, hey, Lawrence Taylor can't even tackle Bo Jackson. He just said, you know what? That's how good Bo Jackson is. So hopefully I bring that aspect to the game, hold guys accountable. But yeah, today's game, especially with no shot blockers, I know.
This is, man, this is why I always sound like the old man in the club. I understand that. I appreciate that. But it's like, I always say this about, like I say this about Jordan, and people always, you know, people are like, well, Jordan, well, today, he only shot 29% on threes. And I always say this. As great as Michael Jordan was, do you think he wouldn't have gotten the three in his bag if he needed it?
He would have figured it
out. You know what I mean? Like,
I think he would have figured out how to make threes.
Come on, dog.
In D.C., I shot 40% from the three-point line. I brought Buzz out there.
Yeah.
We lost the playoffs by one game or won by one game.
Yeah.
I got criticized for not being on the block enough. I go to Sacramento, I get criticized for not being outside enough. And so I'm lucky to have played in a place that had a system and great players. And, you know, if you look at Golden State, they're running Sacramento plays. And that's not because of me. That's because of the great coach Kareem and others.
Yes,
our style of game is here. I see it a lot. I just appreciate it more than I try to get credit for. But just know, I like to have my Sacramento team playing today, too. But I will say this. I would love today. I would destroy. I would eat up. But in college, I only feared like one guy, mm-hmm. and his name was Glenn Robinson. I had never seen anything like that.
Yeah,
I'd never seen anything like Durant. I wouldn't want to play today only because they could move him to center and not have to guard. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm a chill with all that. Right. You know, I put them on the post, I get them in there. They'd have to double, but
right.
Oh man, crossover, my the knees. I don't even know about it.
So that's a beautiful segue into this season. Obviously, you know, KD hasn't played in a minute. We see what's going on with the Lakers and all of their injury stuff. You know, we want to get you on record to pick a team who you think right now is like, all right, I think in come June, July, this is going to be the team that's most serious. Are you defending champion Lakers? Are you Clippers going to redeem themselves? Are you enamored of all of the talent in Brooklyn?
So it's only one caveat, and that's health. But everybody could get hurt. But LeBron being hurt, that worries me, because high ankle injuries, in my opinion, are just as bad as knee injuries during that time. But I'll say this. The key to the championship was bought out of his contract, and his name was Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond is the key to the championship. He is the key. He breaks all barriers. He makes things uneven. He can score in the post, and he doesn't even need the ball to score. And defensively, he's much better than we give him credit for. I would make him have the impact of a Rodman, a better scoring Rodman. That's how I put it. He can't guard laterally out there like the Magics and all that, the Rodman guard, but Rodman couldn't guard the Patrick Ewings and those guys either. He can stay inside. His impact, to me, puts the Lakers as a front runner, and I believe I picked Brooklyn before the year started. Mm. But the Lakers didn't have DeAndre Jordan. He's going to just – I mean, not DeAndre Jordan. I'm sorry, Drummond. He's going to change the game. So, yeah, I'm on record saying the Lakers, if LeBron's healthy, Drummond did that.
I agree with you on Andre. I think, you know, and I've seen him initiate from the elbows. I mean, he can do that. You don't need him to do it, but he can do it if you needed him to do it. You know what I mean? So, and defensive, I mean, again, this gets back to the whole rebounding thing, and I just don't understand. I'm getting old. I'm getting crotchety.
You don't understand how a guy that's averaging 15 rebounds a game can get bought out of his deal.
It's just available. A guy that gets 15 rebounds a game, you can just have him now, like for nothing.
Remember how great Capella was when he played with Harden?
Yeah.
So let's really think about this. The only thing that made him great was that he's a really good player, but he could block shots, rebound. But the biggest thing we take away from the three-point shot is the new game. It is.
Yeah.
But you get more three-point shots with a big that can roll to the hoop and you throw it up. Right. Period. That's why Harden is his best. If Harden has 6 layups in a game, his team will win and then he'll have 50 points. Because if he's making layups, the floor opens up and spreads.
Right.
So all I'm saying is every player will get wide open threes now, because two are going to have to go to Drummond, because he's going to have 20 points on 8 shots at the end of the game, because all he did was go up and dunk.
Right.
And so that's the one part people get lost in. You want more threes? Have a big fella role. Even think about the big fellas at Golden State. Just even think about Draymond. How does he pump you out?
Right.
On the pick and roll. One alley-oop. Now, the rest of the shooters are open. He's a game changer.
Yeah, and that's what Spoelstra, he invented the term vertical spacing. He was like, look, when you got a guy that can go up and grab it at the hoop, it sucks the defense in and allows for more space on the outside. That's basically what C-Webb is describing. Like, and the Lakers were missing that this season. They didn't have a sort of vertical threat at the big man spot. I mean, I love Marcus Saul as much as anybody, but he's not catching no alley-oops.
Earthbound.
And even Montrez, who, again, I'm a fan of Montrez's game, but he's not a vertical threat. Drummond absolutely presents that. And
Drummond is twice of Montrez. That's all I'm saying. No disrespect to Montrez, because I can't believe he's doing this at 6'6".
Right.
I'm just – Drummond, and you got to be able to run. Drummond can run with Porzingis, and – if your team style is to let him off the hook and keep shooting those threes out there, thank you. We'll take that all day. You know what I'm saying? He's an impact guy. He's a connector, man, because he doesn't need the ball. He makes up for your mistakes. I like him, man.
Yeah,
man,
and like he, and in the past, he probably got miscast as some kind of, like, you know, low post, like he's going to be Hakeem Olajuwon type of situation. And, you know, that's not his game, I think. And you know, I think another thing that people need to just realize, man, LeBron's ability to raise a guy's floor to be like, now this is like the bare minimum he's going to do out there. Because the way he's going to be set up, what he's going to be asked to do, you know, the burden is just going to be so much less. It's exciting. I want to see what they do when they finally get all their guys back, for sure, DA.
Yeah, no question. No question. And you mentioned Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn's going to be, I mean, I don't see anybody beating Brooklyn. I don't think Philly can beat them. I just don't. I don't think they can. Maybe they can. I don't think they can. Just too much firepower. And you know, now that they're getting, you know, Claxton's giving them a minimum defense. No, I mean, like, championship defense, just minimum defense. They just need, like, to get, like, four stops a quarter, and they're good. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it if it's Brooklyn-LA. I think that would be a great final. Just a killer final.
Well, and some people are saying, and I don't, not that I agree with them, but, you know, there's people that are talking about the Milwaukee thing of, like, look, they got the Jrue Holiday defender. They got, you know, Giannis can do a credible job one-on-one against KD, and Chris Middleton has always been a quality guy. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great, but how are they going to score as much as Brooklyn in a given series? It just doesn't feel like anybody's got the firepower out east to do it.
Just don't know how. I don't know how. I don't know how you keep them from a $120 every night. I don't know how you do it. When they're fully functional, when they're the fully operational Death Star, I don't know how you do it. Man, yeah. Webb, I want to talk to you about the class you're teaching at Morehouse, though. I'm really excited. I was really excited to see that. And I just wanted to ask you how that came about and what you want to introduce to the young men down there, what, you know, that you're teaching online.
Thanks, DA. Well, believe it or not, I taught the class about 6 years ago at Wake Forest University. Okay. And so I already kind of taught this. And it's just about it's a study in protest. And really our goals in the class are to make sure I'm the conduit between the older generations, such as my mentors like Dr. Harry Edwards, John Carlos, and others, all the way to the Kaepernicks and LeBron and the wonderful things they're doing today. So this study in protest, we talk about everything. What was the goal? What were the conditions at the time? Was the cause righteous? What were the actions to speak up to those causes? Were those causes lasting? What was the sacrifices? Would you do it again? You know, when we talk specifically about basketball, when you talk about fair trade, and we study fair trade, what is fair trade? It's so funny that a man in basketball named Spencer Haywood addressed that issue through Harvard and the four-year rule. And so through that, wasn't just, oh, do college players get out earlier? No, it was a fair trade law. So when you talk about that, $30 billion just in basketball only, not in football and other sports that this has gone to, yeah. $30 billion, that impact we've seen monetarily just in sports. So we just try to make sure that we understand, wow, do you see what the LeBrons and the Kaepernick, because what LeBron has done, just let me say, is I admire him off the court. And there's not many people that I can say that about. And so what I've seen LeBron do there is awesome. But because of the tools and the times there, you can't say it's better than what Kareem had when he didn't have social media, or that Kareem's move of letting Spencer Haywood on the court, that impact the ripple effect. So, yeah. you know, we can prejudge the ripple effect. And that's just what I want to hold students accountable. But it's just a study and an appreciation and protest.
Webb, I would love to know sort of how long you've been into these things, right? Because let's face it, not everybody, life is so hectic. Like in the rat race of American capitalism, a lot of your life is just based on getting your bills paid. Not everybody has the time to do the sort of academic work that it takes to understand our history, specifically when it comes to the Black experience here in America. I just would love to know how you found yourself getting into this, so much so to the point where you now want to teach people about it, you know, young people, and let them understand the history of stuff and how we want to move forward within this place.
Well, I just thank God. I believe in God, and you know, I thank Him for my family. Mm-hmm. And so these are things that, you know, would just be discussions in our discussions in our household. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent the day yesterday crying watching George Floyd's murder all over again. And so, you know, I have children. I want them to appreciate those that came before them. I want to make sure the narrative is one of continuance. You know, in our community is one where we appreciate our elders. And I want to make sure that's within this history. To be able to work with someone like Morehouse is just an honor because they bring validity to what I do and students can study there. And so, you know, and earn credits for this class. And so for me, it's just kind of the way I was raised. And I look at it as a wonderful opportunity to make my part, to tell more about, to be a storyteller and to make sure that, you know, that there's a different context as well to what they've heard. And so, and I really appreciate the relationships I have with the generation before and now. So it's just been a journey and one that came as an opportunity. It was never a goal. And hopefully I'm a good steward with it.
You have been in that space for so long, Chris. I mean, it's not new to you, you know. And along those lines, I just wonder, like, you know, what are your thoughts on all this voter suppression stuff that we're seeing in Georgia and in other states? And where can athletes be the most effective as advocates against that sort of thing? You know, because this isn't really, I mean, it would be great to think that you could lead a boycott of Delta and Coca-Cola, but it's probably not very realistic. You know, like it's just hard. That would be very hard to pull off. So what's the space that they can operate in that would be effective?
You know, it's first of all, locally and specifically to their listeners on social media, because they have a wide reach, and to inspire someone to do something. They can inspire maybe someone more powerful and passionate than them.
Yeah.
But DA, I think we've supported causes as the NBA. I think we put ourselves in a position. We've supported causes that when you really think about it, and not to be emotional in any way or speak about any race, any type of people, I don't mean any specific cause.
Yeah.
But this is the most pressing cause.
Yeah.
So how could we move, you know, put pressure on other municipalities to, you know, not have events, to do this, to do that, for things less than this, which could affect all those events we were trying to affect positively anyway.
Right.
This is the line in the sand. And so I think each individual can do what they can, but DA, I really think, yeah, it is a crime to give water to people in line. Do you know that so now what you're doing is saying that if you're older, elderly, and you wait in line for 2 to 3 hours, we can't give you water. Yeah. Like, just think about the implications. Think about the implications of different communities where kids would come out, and because the church came out and voted in droves, this is a way to support this kid with cookies and more. They're taking inspiration away. Not just vote, everything. And so this one's on the big corporations. Like, there's no more supporting, you know, this guy and then saying, hey, we're over here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a new day. So I'm looking forward to see how we remedy this situation.
You know what, guys? I'm going to be uncharacteristically optimistic. Like,
oh, Lord, this is a first.
I think about this kind of thing. I honestly think the attention that this is having, and I do truly believe in the ingenuity of Black people. Like, the history has just borne itself out. Like, you try to put a little gate in front of us, we're going to freaking figure out a way to, you know, go up under that gate, right? And I think the attention that this thing has got, I think people are going to be on their jobs. And you're going to see some very creative ways to get people to water and the grub and all of that. I think this is having...
Yeah, but it has to hurry up, though, because there are people going to jail in the meantime, and all it takes is one election.
Yeah,
you know,
if
you think about it, was they stopped... They went and said, why did Black people vote so much? They could do it from not coming in.
Right.
Okay, we're going to change that. Mm-hmm. No more chairs or sitting here or no more water. We're going to change that. You know, I was speaking to Stacey Abrams, who's just a superhero.
Yeah.
And she was just saying how this is the most Jim Crow of Jim Crow things that you could do. This isn't Jim Crow 2.0. This is the beginning of Jim Crow.
Yeah.
And so I hear what you're saying. I'm inspired as well. The spark has been lit.
I think people are very, very excited.
It's about 4 years. It's and they're doing it in front of our face, and we can't get used to it. We can't normalize this. This is the most racist. Mm-hmm. We can't normalize this because it's not sexy and it's bold. We have to understand that there is nothing worse you could do to a community besides not letting them have a say in what goes on. There is nothing worse. That means you can keep killing unarmed Black people because you don't have a say. It means you can keep institutional racism because these corporations can keep coming in the community because you don't have a say. It's the only say you have. So I'm with you. I'm with you, but there's a war going on.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's going to require so much of a larger response on the part. And I'm not trying to put pressure on LeBron or anybody, but this is when you need someone of that magnitude to say, I'm not going to do business in a state that does this. I'm not doing it.
We've done it for less.
Yeah.
You know, we've done it for causes that we've had to vote to even make those people recognizable.
Yeah, right.
So now we can't vote, which means we can no longer change. You're right, D.A. That's what I wish it was a house on fire mentality with everything, because I'm really worried about this. Because once this works one time, that means other cities are going to be bold enough.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. No, they'll replicate this. You know, it's 200 bills out there. You know what I mean? So anyway, I don't want to end on a downer note.
No, we can't end on that. Because I definitely, because I mentioned this earlier, C-Web, we know that you made the beat for Nas's Surviving the Times, which is a great song, by the way. It's not just that C-Web did the beat. Like, the song is amazing. Can you tell us the story about how that came together?
So it was, I was blessed to do two songs. Shout out to Salam Remy. One is Blunt Ashes, and he was having a conversation with my father, like, about old times and what went on. My father's from the South, and it was a conversation like the one we just had.
Yeah.
And so from that, Nas was like, can you believe Patty McDaniels won an Oscar and couldn't go to the Grammys? You know, it was all the stories of great old Hollywood. So that was real cool to be a part of. But the first movie I ever remember seeing in the movie theater was The Wiz. I went to a small church school. And in that part, you know, when Nipsey Russell, you know, goes to E.T., it was just my favorite part. And I happened to be in the studio when he was working on his greatest hits album, and Salam Remy, who's one of the greatest ever producers in the world, you know, was there with me. And I heard his song, and it was just talking about his career and his life looking back. And one thing I always recognize is that our career mirrors each other. Like, we came out at the same time, we had success, you know, and, you know, I just, whenever I listen to him, I heard it is my life. And so right then, just able to go make that beat, and I thought the words, you know, and the sample, you know, were appropriate. And so I definitely turn that on in the car once in a while and listen to it and say thanks for being able to, you know, to be able to have it. And shout out to him because he just won a Grammy this year. Long time coming. It's awesome being a part of that.
When I watched it, I was stunned. I was like, wait, Nas, they ain't never give Nas a Grammy. Yes, I was like, what? That's not possible, is it?
Not even for a song, not for an album, not any collaboration, nothing. You just
I was stunned when I saw that. I just said, I don't know. It shows you what I don't know. Web, man, this has been great. This has been so great, man. It's so good to see you, but man, I love what you're doing, man. There will be a time where I will call you and say congratulations, and that's all I'm gonna say. So.
Thank you so much, DA, and really miss you, man, out there. But it's good to know you're still part of the game. And thank you guys for having me on.
Man,
we appreciate you coming on, C-Web. Get back behind the boards. I know you're a busy man. We need more C-Web beats.
I got you,
man. Appreciate it, man. Thank you, everybody, for listening, man. Leave that 5-star review on Apple, on iTunes, all the places you get this fine podcast, and we will be with you next week.